At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Make the right call for the right Medicare Advantage benefits. Go to MedMutual.com/review to schedule your free Medicare plan review with Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, kids of all ages, and also adults who are 21 and over. My name is Dan Selke. I am the editor-in-chief of WinnersComeNet, here with Daniel Roman, also an editor of WinnersComeNet. And every week here on Take the Black, we talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, etc. and so forth. And welcome to everybody currently watching, including Martha. How are you? Good to see you. And how are you, Daniel Roman?
I'm doing good. I'm at home today. The clouds are out, so I may be a little slower on the uptake, but generally I'm good, and we've got some exciting stuff to talk about. So stoked to get into the fantasy, sci-fi, nerdery extraordinaire. How are you, Dan?
Not bad. If you're down for a spot of preambulatory banter, I do think this is interesting. So your internet is satellite.
Always.
And it's not super, it's you know, there exists better internet.
Oh, it's awful.
And you're yes, trying to dig a trench on your property. You own land. You're a house. You think you're better than us. How fancy. To install some wired internet. And apparently, what you just told us before the break is, before you can do that, you have to what?
Okay. So we can get into the trench trivia. So if you are going to dig in the United States, there's a hotline you're supposed to call that legally you have to call in a lot of states, just to make sure that you, fool that you are, who is digging holes in lawns and driveways, that you're not going to accidentally hit buried power lines or buried phone lines or any sort of buried lines that are already there, that they will then fine you if you cut them in half if you didn't call. So yes, I will be digging a trench soon to get better internets, to hopefully not have delays in the future. So cool. Yes, that is some trivia that's going on here right now. So you may see some changes in the next couple months on the pixelation of my face in this podcast.
Now that you said all the reasons, it makes more sense. Before, I was just kind of like, you yes, gotta call the government to be able to dig a hole on your own property. This is bull crap. I'm going off the grid. I'm growing my own food. I'm going to disconnect myself from society. Okay, that makes a little more sense now. So
yes,
I take it back. Well, I'll end this little segment by saying, when you dig a hole in your property, you get to call the government and get permission to make sure you're not hurting anybody. Now, Daniel, what are
that's
we talking
right
about today?
Julie says you do here too. Apparently in Australia, you have to dig as well. It's just to make sure you're not cutting your own power to dig your holes. So today we are not going to spend most of our show talking about hole digging, only a little bit. Most of the show, holes. Most of the show, we are going to be talking about some comments, very, very brief comments. George R. R. Martin talked about his trip to the Blood Moon set many, many years ago. And we don't get to talk about Blood Moon a whole lot. That was one of the canceled Game of Thrones prequels, the one that HBO filmed a really expensive pilot with Naomi Watts and Miranda Richardson and then said, oh, God, what have we done? And unceremoniously canceled it. So we're going to talk about that. We've got some teases from Severance Season 2 later on. A little bit of Rings of Power chat. Some exclusive teases, because you, Dan, spoke to one of the writers from Severance. So I'm very excited to hear what he had to say about the next season. But we're going to start with Blood Moon, because it's nice and brief. So basically, in Martin's most recent blog post, he talked about how he went to Belfast and kind of all the things he did there. And one thing he didn't do on this trip, but that he did in a previous trip in 2019, was he stopped by the Paint Hall, which is the famous, very large studio lot where Game of Thrones was mostly filmed, where a lot of the indoor sets were set up, which, fun fact, was also the actual lot where the real life Titanic was built, was mm-hmm. then the studio set for Game of Thrones. So the last time he was there in 2019, he saw the sets for Blood Moon. And I just thought that's really cool. Because again, it's just so rare to hear anyone say anything about Blood Moon. So basically what he said, and I will not impersonate George R. R. Martin because I will just make a fool of myself. I don't have the impression on lock like you do. That's the idea. I'm not going to do it. I'm choking. So Game of Thrones sets, this is quote, imagine a George R. R. Martin voice. Game of Thrones sets had been struck when GOT wrapped, of course, but new sets had gone up in their places. Interiors for Casterly Rock and Winterfell designed for Blood Moon, the Jane Goldman pilot that had just wrapped. Interiors for Winterfell and Casterly Rock, as they might have looked thousands of years before the War of the Five Kings, occupied much of the Paint Hall, and we were able to wander through them. So, Dan, what are your thoughts about Blood Moon? Do you think we will ever get to see this thing, or do you think we are destined to just get teases like this to stoke our curiosity till the end of time?
Oh, we'll never see it. Blood Moon was a Game of Thrones prequel set like thousands of years before even House of the Dragon. White Walkers come. They did a pilot. They spent money on it before they decided, nope, we can't go ahead with this. And then they went with House of the Dragon and A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms instead. I don't think we'll ever see it. It's just an interesting curiosity of Westerosi history. Sometimes,
yeah,
you know, if I were an HBO executive, like I am, from between the hours of 1 a.m. to 8 a.m. in my dreams, I wonder if I would try to repackage things and sell them off. Like, tomorrow they are opening this giant Game of Thrones auction where they are going to auction off 900 like props, costumes, pieces of pointy furniture, wink, wink, yeah. That they used on Game of Thrones for thousands of dollars. And I'm sure they make a pretty penny off it. Like, I'm just saying right now, if you wanted to put this unaired, aborted, canceled Game of Thrones series Blood Moon on DVD, I'd buy it. I'd give you $15. Like, I would do it. So
a lot of
some
people
of those
would.
Are the business ideas that I can't actually monetize because I don't have access to this kind of IP.
It is crazy though. Like, I agree with that. You know, I'd be right there with you buying the copy of Blood Moon. I wonder with something like this if they can't even really repackage it, because like, was it even done with editing? You know, like, was it even really a watchable hour of television when they canceled it? Or was it still kind of being put together? But yeah, it was set, you know, like you said, thousands of years before Thrones, starred Naomi Watts, Miranda Richardson, had Jamie Campbell Bauer, who's Vecna from Stranger Things. Yeah, and we've only gotten glimpses of it, like that picture that producer Richard put up a few minutes ago of Naomi Watts that came out like last year, fairly recently. So even though Blood Moon was canceled years ago, we're still occasionally getting the odd glimpse, and man, I just want to see something from it, anything from it. And I wish you were an HBO executive, Dan, because selling things like Blood Moon or like whoa, where have special features gone? It still baffles me we don't have House of the Dragon with deleted scenes for either season.
Yeah, that's so,
weird. HBO,
like,
let us, it's so weird. Let us give you our money, please.
I mean, they must figure that it's more expensive to put deleted scenes on there than it is than the returns they'll get. I'm sorry, everybody. If you're watching on the video, I'm trying a lot of things with my hair, but it's none of your concerns. It's fine. Just want to look beautiful for you. But yeah,
audio listeners, but come get in on
interesting,
it.
Interesting little side tangent on the march of time in terms of Game of Thrones television shows and spinoffs.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
It's interesting, too. So I see some people in the chat, like Benjack said, I'd also buy a DVD of the original Game of Thrones pilot. And hell yeah. So for listeners, I assume you know this, but on the off chance you don't, the original Game of Thrones pilot is infamous because it was really bad. And when David Benioff and Dan Weiss brought it to HBO and showed, I think it's Craig Mazin, who's one of the showrunners of The Last of Us, was a buddy of theirs. They showed Craig Mazin this as well as HBO. And Craig Mazin said, you guys have a big problem because it just didn't quite work. And then they I don't remember who they basically HBO gave them like a seasoned TV exec to help them redo the pilot and do the series. And that worked. But yeah, there are all those sorts of oddities where it's like at this point, they're like historical artifacts. And whether we ever get it, I doubt we will. But like you said, you know, people would pay for it, packaging and all that aside. So maybe one day.
And it's interesting because now when George R. R. Martin tells the House of the Dragon producers, you have a big problem. Instead of going back to redo things, they say, we have faith in our creative team and you have to change things. And it's okay. And by the way, thank you to Julie and the others for complimenting my hair. I appreciate it.
So that's funny, though, because Martin liked the original pilot. He also cameoed in
it. Did he really?
So that was his. He has said that he enjoyed it, but he recognized he was probably too close to it to have an objective opinion. So that he was not the one saying this is not going to work. That was fully HBO. But yeah, it is interesting times to go from there to where we are now, which is in turmoil in the realm. But
I think a large part of being a creative is probably trying to figure out which voices, both inside your head and without, to listen to and which to ignore.
Sure. Yeah,
I'm sure it's a lot harder to do than we all give it credit for. So it must be very, very difficult. Yeah, it's got to be tricky, even on like a small scale. Like, who do you listen to and who do you tune out? It's pretty insurmountable task sometimes. So I don't envy any of them. And rah rah to all.
Yeah, I feel like that is definitely a a part of that journey, I am sure. But so Blood Moon aside, Martin, he did talk the whole Blood Moon thing, and that's really all he said. So not a lot, but again, anytime someone mentions anything with Blood Moon, we got to talk about it. But that was all a preamble to the fact that when he visited for Blood Moon, the Game of Thrones Museum was there in the paint hall on that studio lot. And now when he went back in 2024, it's no longer there. It has moved to, I believe, the town of Banbridge. And it is monstrously huge compared to what it was the first time he saw it, where he thought it was pretty cool. Now it's massive. And here's another quote from him. He said, "We spent half the day there wandering from room to room while oohing and aahing and talking with the staff, some of whom seem to know more about Westeros than I do. A warm and friendly crew. They were so welcoming to all the visitors, Starks, Lannisters, and White Walkers alike. We could have easily stayed longer, but we had other places to go and people to see. But if your own travels take you to Ireland, don't make the same mistake. There's a lot to see, so leave yourself time to see it all." And these pictures are pictures he and his team, someone attached to him, took these pictures while they were there that are up on screen. Do you think you'll ever go to the Game of Thrones Museum, Dan?
It fully depends if I'm in the area, which I'd like to be.
I would love to go to, it's in Northern Ireland. I've never been, I haven't been to the United Kingdom in some years, but I'm actually sort of planning, like half planning a trip out to that part of the world. And if it crosses, yeah, I'm probably not going to take like a purposeful just vacation for that. But yeah, of course I'd like to. And I'll remind you that tomorrow, a lot of the things you see in those pictures will be auctioned off through a big old Game of Thrones prop auction, 900 pieces, including the Shame Bell. So not the ones like in the museum, I don't think, but plenty to take home. You can make your own damn museum if you have like $3 million.
Pretty much. Yeah. It is a massive auction that they're doing. I didn't realize it started like literally tomorrow. I wonder how they decided, like, which things go to the auction, which things we're going to put in the museum. They had the painted table there in one of those shots. So obviously that gets to stay in the museum, I assume. But yeah, there are no shortage of ways to get your fill of doting on Game of Thrones props these days. But
Daniel?
Yes.
Before we move on, I have a challenge for you. would you be willing to say just one sentence in a George R.R. Martin voice? I personally would like to hear it. What about in the books, Tyrion has his nose cut off? Something like that. In the books. Tyrion has his nose cut off.
Okay.
Very nice.
In the books,
thank you.
Tyrion has his nose cut off. Yeah, I can't do it. I need to spend some time in front of a mirror with an audio recorder working this mercilessly, as all actors should. I'm not an actor, but if I'm going to commit, I guess you got to go method. The Jared Leto method. Dear God, no. I regret everything I just said.
There is this, I still love it. There's this great supercut of George R.R. Martin doing Game of Thrones commentary tracks. And all the time he says, in the books, and that really helped me get it good to the character.
That's really good too.
It's great. And as Ben Jack says, yes, Ryan Connell, Housewreck and Showrunner, does have a podcast about props, which is pretty cool. He's a dork that way. Yeah. And pretty interesting stuff. Daniel, what else is on the agenda for today?
Yeah, so moving away from Westeros, one thing I wanted to ask you about, Dan, is that you spoke to one of the writers from Severance recently, both about his own short film as well as Severance Season 2. Tell us about it. What takeaways did you have from that? I'm very curious.
Yeah, so we here at WinterIsComing.net are not just people who jaw about sci-fi fantasy. We also make sci-fi fantasy news. So I got to talk to Mohammed Al-Masri, who is a writer on the second season of Severance, which is Apple TV Plus's really cool sort of mind-bendy sci-fi show about people who are working in an office who have had their consciousnesses severed such that they do not remember anything from their lives outside the office when they are in the office, and nothing about their lives in the office when they're living their outside lives. What a conundrum. It was really great. You can go read the interview on winterscoming.net. And Mr. Al-Masri basically talked to me about a few things that were just kind of cool and a few things that I can pass off as teases for the next season, which comes out in January, I think. He talked about how he thinks maybe the show hit well when it did because it came out during the pandemic. We were all working from home and stay-at-home orders were all fresh. And so the idea of being kind of sequestered was a big one, which made sense to me. I think success of a show or a movie comes down to, it's got to be good. You got to be at the right time too. And this was both.
Totally.
He was talking about, and yeah, I talked about his sci-fi short film, Other, kind of like about a interdimensional dating across multiple dimensions, which was a really cool idea.
Okay.
It makes sense. This guy ended up getting a gig on Severance. He seems to have a bit of that predilection for the mind bending. But he talked about how Severance, as opposed to a short film, is kind of hard sci-fi. What I most like was him saying that on Severance, which, if you've seen it, I recommend it. It's a really, really cool show. I genuinely like that show. I'm looking forward to it. That it's the kind of show, a little like Lost, that a big part of the appeal is all the mysteries. You know, why is the company doing this to them? What are they actually doing down in the depths of the Lumen basement, refining these numbers? What are they refining? Why are there goats? And what he talked about how, and I think when you have that kind of show, like a puzzle box show, there's the kind that kind of makes up the answers as it goes, which is playing with fire, because that can mean you end up with a dissatisfactory answer. And according to Muhammad Al-Masri, the guy in charge of Severance, Dan Erickson, is the sort of person who has everything in his head. There is an answer for everything. They have a mythology mapped out. They kind of they know the questions that they're asking. They know how to answer those questions, which makes me happy, because I do think if your plot's going to lean on what does it mean? What's the mystery? Not like Game of Thrones at all, right? Game of Thrones, what I liked about Game of Thrones, there really wasn't much of that. There was some mystery, but I wanted to watch that show because I liked the characters. I want to see what they did next. I want to watch Severance in part because I want to know what's going on. How does this link up? So it's good to hear that there is a plan. Also, he seemed genuinely excited about season two. I remember when the House of the Dragon things were coming out for season two, and like Matt Smith was talking about, like, this year Damon gets fat and lazy. And I'm like, what is he talking about?
Now we know.
It kind of gave a couple of red flags, which, yes, now we know that it was they went in a weird direction. It's good to hear someone who just sounds like, I am excited about it. I'm excited for folks to see it. I think people are going to love it, and I can't wait. So I'm looking forward to January when that thing comes on Apple TV Plus.
That's awesome. That really excites me, too, because you can't fake that. Like you said, like, not to say that Matt Smith was shading House of the Dragon, but like, when someone is genuinely really excited about something that they did that's coming up, like, that can be so infectious, and like, it's the opposite of a red flag. It's a green flag. Like, ooh, Severance might be great.
It wasn't a red flag. It was just like it kind of gave off the vibe of like, how do I put this politely? Well, he gets a little lazy, whereas I don't get that vibe about Severance season two.
There were a few, I don't want to say comments like that, but, you know, like Emma Darcy talked about missing working with Matt Smith. Like, you know, Olivia Cooke talked about scenes she did that were cut that she was like, why did I do this scene? There were, I don't want to say shade, but there were comments that made me raise an eyebrow and wonder what the hell was going on. And there were eyebrow worthy comments at best. But Severance, you know, that show has been 3 years. We've been waiting. We will have been waiting for season two by the time it comes out, which is, it's so tough, this television landscape, because I really enjoyed Severance. I watched it when it came out, but like, I'm going to have to really muster up some motivation for the second season by the time it's here. But if it's as good as Mr. Al-Masri makes it sound, probably won't be an issue.
I was lucky. I watched it like earlier this year, and even I'm finding it hard to wait, but at least it's fresher in my mind. So
yeah,
good for me.
Yeah, totally. So that is, yeah, that's all really exciting. As Dan said, you can read that interview on winterscoming.net. If you're watching us on YouTube, I believe you can also watch it on our channel. So head on over to the channel, click like and subscribe, go visit our page, and you should be able to find it there in our interview playlist. Or in the chat, because producer Richard takes no prisoners, or Dan, or whoever put that there. But do you have anything else you want to say about Severance before we move on to another fantastical series?
Just a thanks for Muhammad Al-Masri for talking to me, and feel free to talk to me again. It was fun.
Yeah. So the next thing we're going to talk about is the Rings of Power. And we're going to do this a little briefer than last week, because last week we had a really big kind of dedicated show to Rings of Power season two. But Dan, you were the only one who had seen the finale by that point. At this point, our viewers have seen it. I've seen it. I wanted to kind of open the floor for a post-mortem. Anybody in the comments, let us know what you thought of Rings of Power season two. I'll just start by saying you were right. You were very right, Dan. The finale was pretty good. Probably the best episode of the season.
Well, maybe the series.
maybe the series, which kind of bodes well, right? It feels like the finale was kind of the, I don't want to say cat's out of the bag, but like Sauron's making plays now. He's stabbing Galadriel. He's killing Celebrimbor, which that scene, that was a okay. I feel like the Rings of Power, one qualm that I have with it, and with a lot of these shows, House of the Dragon actually has this issue too. Because they're prequels to beloved properties, they feel like they must be self-referential. And sometimes that works. And sometimes it makes me cringe or laugh. And I will say, I loved the Celebrimbor scene, but when he called Sauron the Lord of the Rings and then croaked, I cackled. I was like, no, seriously. Even though like it's like he is, like it's fitting. It's not even like that's a stretch, but it just feels like a stretch.
I thought it worked in context, but I agree with you that the trope of say the title is kind of an invitation to cheese. It's like, you know what, Will Smith, we truly are bad boys for life. Like, you just shouldn't do it. it just doesn't really feel, it takes you out of the experience, I think. But I thought that worked, as I don't think anybody knew what the Lord of the Rings was. And I love that scene. Yeah. When I was,
me too.
We also got to interview a bunch of folk from the Rings of Power. I interviewed Charlie Vickers, who plays Sauron. And basically, the entire interview, because we only had 5 minutes, was just me saying, that scene was awesome. Talk about that scene. Oh, you did? Okay. talk about the scene some more. Because I love that scene. I thought it was maybe the best thing they've done.
Yeah, I agree. That and the scene in the previous episode where Celebrimbor breaks out of the illusion, I thought were some of the best scenes the entire series has done. I like the sword fight with Galadriel, too, where Sauron's kind of shape-shifting. It was fun. Yeah, it wasn't my favorite scene. Sword fights, it's hard because at this point we've had so many good ones in television that you really, to really like knock people's socks off, I feel like presents some, I don't know, challenges, I guess. You know, like I'm thinking of like Game of Thrones had some great ones, like Brienne and the Hound, like The Witcher. Say what you want about The Witcher, but some of the sword fights are insane in that show, like the Blaviken fight and the Vilgefortz fight. What did you think of the Balrog, Dan? And chat, feel free to chime in about this.
Again, one of the stronger bits of the episode. I like the dwarfs. I think that was maybe like one of the two character relationships I really like was between Durin and his father, also named Durin. Dwarf's not very imaginative. And yeah, seeing the older dwarf fighting, the leap into battle, slow-mo, that was like slow-mo used right. Slow-mo used in a not showy, ostentatious, kind of lame Matrix-y way, but to kind of preserve this moment in Durin the Younger's memory forever of his father leaping into battle against this thing. It was nice. I mean, I kind of feel like they're stretching it out a bit because I guess that's just the end of the Balrog for now, even though maybe it's just me knowing the foreknowledge that that's what chases the dwarves out of Khazad Dûm eventually now, I guess. But later, come back. Those are the two good bits. I agree with Julie overall, by the way. I sort of liked it, but it was kind of messy. In the end, it made sense. Like, I liked those parts. I thought the stranger bits were pretty out of nowhere and whatever. The Numenor bits were about as out of nowhere and whatever as they have been. It felt like for those scenes, an episode was missing. Like the strangers just Gandalf. It's just wandering around the Stor village at the beginning. And I'm like, how did he find that? I thought that was supposed to be like the thing he's looking for. He's there. Kieran Hines, Dark Wizards there, just says some things. Let's be friends. No, okay. Well, piss on you. Here, stone's going down. No real buildup. Yeah. No real spark there. The Numenor stuff also, it kind of seemed like he jumped right to Alfeda's own. And by the way, these names I know because I've watched the show closely. I don't think they're terribly memorable characters. So I don't blame anybody for not knowing them, which is a problem the show has. It's up, it's down. Yeah. Some plot lines are good, plot lines are bad. It's a decent watch, and they did a decent job with this decent season and a decent finale. Is it a great, wonderful, like heart-thumping, earthquaking show? Not really, but I enjoy it. And if they were able to get seasons out every year, I think they could really have something.
Yeah, I thought it was, I think it was more or less an improvement on season one. It's a little uneven. Sure. I agree with what you're saying, where some plot lines I enjoyed a lot. The dwarves have been like kind of universally praised. I haven't seen a single person online or anywhere shitting on the dwarves. Like people, it seems like people really liked what they did with them. The Gandalf stuff, the Tom Bombadil, I liked the last scene of them, you know, singing over tea or what have you. But it did feel kind of, I didn't expect when they were like, we've got Tom Bombadil this season, that it was going to be like the core of the Stranger season is hanging out with Tom Bombadil. Yeah. And that, I mentioned this last week, but when you've got stuff like that, like, you know, there were scenes from the finale in some of the trailers. And that to me is kind of a production red flag of, if you're front loading stuff from the end of the season to make your trailer look good, it doesn't bode well for everything before that. Rings of Power, I am glad because Netflix canceled its show Chaos this week, which we'll talk about during the lightning round.
Oh, that's how you pronounce it? Okay, I get it.
Yes, Chaos. And I liked that show. I thought it was really good. I will give Amazon credit for the fact that they have invested in the Rings of Power, and whether it gets slightly shaky reviews or whatever, they're just going to keep on going with it. I think it's probably too much of an investment for them to bail on at this point. And I think their contract was like, if you're going to do it, you have to do however many seasons, even though there are loopholes and stuff like that, I'm sure. Yeah, so I give them credit. The word on the street is we're going to get a season three renewal any day now, is basically what the Hollywood Reporter said last week. So we'll see.
I mean, yeah, but the very fact that we haven't gotten one already, I don't think is a like sterling sign of confidence. If they were really over the moon about the performance and the reception critically and in terms of fans, I think we would have already had one. We probably will get a season three. But I think the fact that it hasn't already been here is a sign that enthusiasm internally is waning a bit, which goes into the whole fantasy sci-fi TV show bubble bursting argument that I think we can probably have a show about at some point.
We could. That would be fun. I'd be interested to, you know, now here we are like 5 years after the end of Game of Thrones, when all the studios were like, let us have the next Game of Thrones. Like now it's starting to collapse in on itself a bit. That would be a fun one to talk about. So I do wonder if we might get an announcement at Comic-Con, because New York City Comic-Con, I think, is this weekend. So it's possible they're holding off to do it there. JP says, Daniel, they don't have a choice, they being Amazon. They've already paid for the rights, and they don't have any other content.
Sure to which they I do. Say, whoo.
Whew, JP coming out spitting fire here. I mean, I like the Wheel of Time personally, and I know there are a lot of people who don't, but I think that is a much stronger show than the Rings of Power at this point.
Amazon's not bad. Like they got The Boys, they got Fallout, they got the Wheel of Time. Their biggest show, I think, is like Jack Reacher, which is another reason I think the bubble will burst, because as we see, like, we can get that many viewers off a show where like a 6'6" guy walks around looking strapping. That's a lot cheaper.
Pretty much.
So we'll probably see a pivot toward that in a minute. Amazon's not doing too bad, though.
Yeah. No, they're not. And they don't have a choice thing because they've already paid for it. That I would be intrigued to know more details about, because that might be true to an extent. Like they signed on for 5 seasons or whatever. There was a stipulation. They're buying the rights. They had to do it within X amount of time. At the same time, we're talking about Amazon here, like one of the biggest companies in the world. Like, you know that they leave themselves loopholes to get out of disadvantageous situations. So we'll see what happens with the Rings of Power. We'll see when we get a season three renewal. It's reportedly getting an almost completely new writer's room for season three, which I don't really know what to make of that. Like the showrunners are still there, but they're getting new writers for the rest. Could just be contracts expiring or something. We don't know enough that I'm concerned about that.
Ditto.
Yeah. But so Rings of Power wrapping up. You have anything else you want to say? Also, yeah, Julie Davies, the Wheel of Time is better. So anything else you want to say about the Rings of Power before we just open the floor for all the other things we're watching and reading and doing, which is quite a lot at the moment, I think.
Bring all those things on.
Okay. So, Dan, and all of you out there in the chat, what have you been watching, reading? What media have you been putting in your brain?
Yeah, you want me to go? Because, okay.
Sure.
I feel like I have to bring up the Joker movie. Just for a second.
Oh, yeah! Yeah.
Joker 2, Folie à Deux, pretentious French subtitle, came out last Friday, a sequel to the first Joker movie, made over $1 billion at the box office. I saw it at a critic screening, because I'm special and cool, I can see things free.
Because you're a critic.
And I thought it was fine. I thought it was some high points, some low points. Obviously, I'll be honest, I was surprised because it's become a proper backlash firestorm. People hate this thing. It's got cratering review scores from critics and fans alike. The box office is dismal, probably because the word of mouth got around that it's bad. People are mad at it in like a personal way. They seem personally offended. It kind of reminds me of the Game of Thrones response to the final season, to be honest. Mm. That's sort of the sense that I get. And I think that you could take it a further way and say that in both cases, there's this sense that people behind it were trying to defy expectations. I don't think it quite holds up. But the main problem with the Joker movie seemed like the main one. There are a bunch of them, but like the main one. There are some folk who seem to not like musicals on principle. I do not agree with this.
Sure.
But I can see there. I'm not kidding. There are reviews that are like, why is it musical bad? Which I do not endorse. I like musicals. And I thought some of the songs were fine, some of the songs were bad, and Joaquin Phoenix can't sing very well. And they took Lady Gaga, who plays Harley Quinn, and sometimes like had her not sing like purposefully bad. And I'm like, what are you doing? It's Gaga, bitch. Come on. Have her belt. The main thing people are upset about is that it kind of took the first movie, which was sort of like a power fantasy about this utter fringy loser who becomes an agent of chaos. He kills a bunch of folk and he sows discord and the city explodes and he experiences a moment of dark transcendence and joy and takes him and kind of makes him a, again, pathetic, fringy loser. And this time he just stays that way. But he doesn't really have that blow up. I think it offended people's sense of identification with the first movie. I think it's utterly divorced from like the DC version of Joker to the point where you can't really enjoy it on that level. It seems like what we have here is a classic Hollywood ego trip boondoggle where the director Todd Phillips
boondoggle
had the political capital to make this movie completely his way. And his way was making like an extremely expensive art film that, by the way, is quite beautiful, but that doesn't really fit into the superhero multiverse or even attempt to at all. And you've got to do it a little. Like, you've got to try to make some people happy. I think there are some redeeming values to it. I think the problem is not as a DC Joker movie. Like, if this were just about a crazy, fringy, mentally ill person who becomes a cause célèbre and then claps it in himself, it'd be different. But he's playing with fire by using the DC IP, which he probably had to do to get it made in the first place. And you can't turn your back on that this completely and not expect some blowback. And the fact that it costs so much money to make and so much of that money was salaries for the really famous folk involved, it seemed like a vanity project that spiraled out of control. Or I will say, though, a studio mandated vanity project, because Warner Brothers definitely said, it made $1 billion, make another one. You can do whatever you want. And he's like, I can do whatever I want, you say.
Like, I don't even really blame him.
Yeah.
This sort of... It actually also reminds me a bit of Batman Returns. Speaking of other Batman sequels made back in, like, the 91 or 92 or whatever. Because that was also Tim Burton got free reign to do whatever he wanted. He made a completely batshit weird Batman movie that I still think was a lot more fun than this. So it has a better reputation. But that also kind of killed the franchise for a minute. So interesting parallels.
Batman Returns stuff. What? Batman Returns was so good.
For a second. Everybody left. Michael Keaton left after that. Tim Burton left after that. The only person stuck around was, I didn't kill the franchise, true, but that was the end of that era.
Okay.
Like, that was it.
That's true. Yeah. So Michael Keaton, he talked about this. Yeah, Michael Keaton talked about this recently. He didn't come back because of it went campy for the third movie again. And he said, nah, that's not the way I think it should go. So he liked the Tim Burton one enough that he wanted more of that, which...
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah. Fair. So it's interesting. It's really interesting what's happening with the Joker. I feel like, you know, I haven't seen it. I didn't see the first one. I really don't care about these movies very, very much.
A round of applause for Dan being so high-minded not to see the popular thing. Sorry, go ahead.
I mean, I have nothing against the popular things. I just, it's hard to sell me on villain origin story movies for superhero characters that try to be totally divorced from the superhero involved. I just think that is kind of folly on premise, and I honestly can't think it. So the first Joker did it well, I guess. The Penguin's doing pretty well right now, but that's a different sort of animal. But in general, I think that's a really, it is great. But it sounds like your analysis feels like it's got some pretty good merit to me, because hearing the paydays for this thing that Todd Phillips, Joaquin Phoenix, and Lady Gaga, those three salaries were pretty much the equivalent of the budget of the first Joker.
Boondoggle.
Crazy. And I do think it's interesting because, like you said, the first Joker was like playing to this idea of this loser character pushed to the brink, becomes an agent of chaos, blows shit up, people cheer. So then I feel like that attracts a certain audience who maybe like the edginess of that, who then when you're like, aww, surprise, nerds, the next one's a musical. Like, it almost feels like trolling that a little bit. And like, I like musicals, so I'm not hating on musicals at all. I just think that's kind of funny.
Yes, and that was I think Rolling Stone had a pretty apt review that was like, and it wasn't about the musical part. It was more about the way it didn't follow through on the power fantasy, that Joker Folie à Deux says fuck the fans, which is kind of the sense that a lot of people have about it. And there is some truth to that. It did not give what people wanted to do. And it was, I don't talk about the musical part anymore. I like some of the music in it, and then some of the other parts I didn't like as much. I thought, I mean, Gaga sounded great when they allowed her to sing. There were a couple of really good sequences.
Yeah.
When they order her to constrict your voice and don't sing well, that's when. But
I wonder if that was part of like why she signed on. She was like, ooh, that sounds like a challenge. Sound bad.
$12 million probably helped.
They're like, look, Lady Gaga, we want to hire you for this auteur art film, and here's your challenge. You have to sound bad. And she was like, I've never done that. Sure. But yeah, so the Joker not doing very well at box offices. We had this on the lightning round, so we may end up skipping that when we get there, because we had to talk about it here.
I had to.
So, Dan, anything else you've been watching? Is that the main one for this week?
No, not really. I just want to say also, I disagree with you a bit about the villain origin story thing. Normally, I'd say, yeah, don't do that. I think the Penguin's my favorite thing on at the moment. I think this weekly Sunday HBO show about the origins of Batman's fourth most notorious enemy, the Penguin, is really killing it. Like, it's really entertaining.
It's well written, very well acted, well imagined, well paced. I've seen the whole thing. It just gets better. Like the final run is pretty terrific. Cool. I feel like exciting. That the original Joker is kind of proving that you can do this well. It's all about a balance. Like both Joker movies and the Penguin, I do think they feel a little ashamed of being comic book superhero things. The Joker let it get way out of control.
I can see that.
By just going off the rails in the second movie. The Penguin has it under control, but it's still like, you know, Oswald Cobblepot's too goofy and change his name to Oscop, that kind of thing. There's no over-the-top comic book stuff, or at least a very minimum of it. They do both feel like, we're going to do a comic book movie, but take it seriously. Which has been done, by the way. That's like The Dark Knight. That's Christopher Nolan's trilogy. Yes. Like this kind of thing has been tried. And I think what we're seeing is that there's a line that you can't cross when you do that kind of thing. You can make a superhero thing and you can do it prestige version of it, whether it's The Dark Knight or The Penguin or the first Joker movie, but you can't become so contemptuous of the source material and go completely over the line that you lose people, which is what happened with Folie à Deux. So there is a line and The Penguin's on the right side of it and Folie à Deux is on the wrong side.
I completely agree with that. I completely agree with everything you're saying. I think the Penguin is in a slightly different situation when it comes to the superhero villain movie, partially because it is the origin for Oscorp becoming basically like a kingpin of Gotham, but it's also set after the Batman. So it's not trying to pretend the Batman doesn't exist in this world. He's just not around right now. He's worrying about bigger things than Oz, which is kind of the whole thing of Oz, is everyone underestimates him, versus, you know, like the Kraven the Hunter movie that is coming out from Sony, you know, Morbius. Like those are all Spider-Man movies that are about villains that pretend Spider-Man isn't, they don't want to touch him. They don't want him in their movies. I think Venom did an okay job. I liked Venom more than I expected, but I think it's an uphill battle, we'll say. It is interesting to have two DC properties on now that are so firmly on either side of the line, because the Penguin is, again, people seem to be loving it. I have not heard a single bad thing about the Penguin, and the Joker is turning people into crazed lunatics in a way maybe the Joker would approve of, but the studio execs certainly don't.
I'll move on, but like, not to spoil it, like I don't really care that much if the hero isn't in it, so long as I think it's interesting. Now, I will say there are some things that happen later in the Penguin. I think folk will be like, Batman should really be paying attention to this. Like there's some big things that are like, how okay. Someone should get involved. But it didn't matter, because by that point I'm really into it. Robert Harris says Daryl Dixon's pretty good. Yeah, people have been loving Daryl Dixon. Nice. Our reviewer, Ashley Hurst, thinks it's the high point of the Walking Dead series this season. So I'm happy people are enjoying that. Well, are you watching it?
I'm not. I saw part of the first season. I didn't finish it, so I haven't watched the second yet. I liked it. I just think it's easy to get in the hype. And The Walking Dead has some iconic parts in seasons 1-7, 1-8. So, so I've been watching a few things this week. The Penguin, obviously, I really enjoying Agatha All Along. Speaking of musicals that aren't cringe, because I think Agatha is working the music in a pretty good way, and it doesn't take itself too seriously. So I'm just finding that it's working really well. It's one of the better Marvel shows in a while, and it feels like a TV show because every week is a new episode instead of like the 8-episode movie type format. Have you been watching that one, Dan?
I have. I like it. It's cute. Listen, the thing about a show like that is that even though I think it's done well and I think it's entertaining, it does feel like make a show about Agatha. We'll figure out why we're doing it as we go. I don't think it has a strong reason to exist beyond being funsies, but I like funsies and it is funsies. And that Witch's Road song is genuinely catchy.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. I think they had the idea for WandaVision did great. Let's do a spinoff about Agatha because Catherine Hahn was great as Agatha. I think that that mandate was probably in place before they had any idea what the hell the show was going to be about. So I think you're totally on point with that.
But it's fine. I like it.
Yeah, whereas it's good for the season.
It does feel like it has enough dramatic gravity that like I would watch this if it were about someone completely outside the Batman universe. I don't feel that Agatha. I think Agatha is Marvel and entertaining itself, and I think that's fine. But I do think the Penguin's like a level up so far as these superhero spinoffs go.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think the Penguin is, I mean, it's probably one of the better shows I've seen in general this year, let alone superhero shows. You know, I have not seen ahead and I am just really enjoying it. I look forward to it every week. It's one of the few shows I make a point to like watch as soon as it drops. So yeah, the Penguin is good stuff.
I believe the fourth episode was this Sunday, and if it's the one I remember, that one should get people talking. That'll be a fun one to observe. Cool.
That's exciting. Yeah, it is the so from the trailer it looks like it's going to have a lot of flashbacks for Sofia Falcone.
That one. The ending's great, but okay, go on. What else are you watching?
Cool. That's exciting. So beyond that, I watched part of the first season of Yellow Jackets, which is now on Netflix. It's kind of reminiscent of Lost. It's about this girls' soccer team in the 90s who crashes in the Canadian mountains and then resorts to cannibalism and other awful stuff to survive. And there's a modern day story, so it's flashing back and forth. That was really good. I also have been on a tear with reading in the past week. I've been in like a science fiction just like kick. So I listened to the audiobook of the Kaiju Preservation Society by John Scalzi, which was a hilarious, fun listen. It was narrated by Will Wheaton about this guy who's like delivering food during the pandemic, who basically gets recruited into this secret government organization that is like exactly what it sounds like. They do like nature preservation for Kaiju in an alternate Earth. Really fun. I read Dark Side by Michael Mame. That is the new Planet Side book, which is like a military sci-fi mystery. That's like his longest running series. This is book 4. And that was rock solid. Retired colonel who gets roped into solving mysteries for missing persons. Corporations are always involved, screwing everyone over. Few authors. So Michael Mame is an actual combat veteran. He served in the military for years. He writes those sorts of action scenes like few other authors that I've read, probably because he's actually been in the hairy situations. So that book was really good. I've also been reading the 10th anniversary issue of Grimdark magazine, which is an ebook thing that is out right now. And it has a short story from Scott Lynch, who is the guy who wrote The Gentleman Bastards, Lies of Locke Lamora. There's a new Lies of Locke Lamora short story in that thing. So reading that. And then last one that I read just last night is called Live Suit, which is a new novella from James S.A. Corey, which like, I didn't even know this thing was coming out. So this is in the same world as the new James S.A. Corey series that started with The Mercy of Gods. Their new book that came out in like August, they've already got a novella out that's connected to it. And I read it last night and it's really cool. It's kind of like a mix between like Starship Troopers and The Forever War by Joe Haldeman. It's got those questions about like soldiers sent off to war. Do you ever really come back? Mixed with some really crazy sci-fi stuff, because people basically, when they sign up, they get this robot suit called the Live Suit. And once you go in it, you're just like basically a robot for the duration of your tour. You don't eat, you don't sleep, you don't do any of the things a normal person does. So that was really, really good. And I'm now even more excited to see what they're going to do with this series, which is their first new series since The Expanse. So, that's what I've been into. A lot of books.
I read your review. It'll be go up in a couple site in the site in a day or two. It sounds really cool. Live suit. A fun, interesting kind of spooky sci-fi concept. So good for those two men.
Yeah. Yeah. Victor says, James S.A. Corey is creating content exactly the way I want authors to do it. Big novels and lots of novellas and short stories in between. And yeah, I agree with that. And they are so, so good. So I keep saying they because James S.A. Corey is two people. They are amazing at this. They did it with The Expanse, too, where they released like short fiction between each of the books. And the books still came out like a year apart, like clockwork. So, yeah. Okay. If you're reading The Mercy of Gods, Victor, and you haven't read Live Suit, definitely make a point to check it out. It's only like $3 on Amazon, and it's like a 100-page novella. Yeah, really good. But
a bargain at any price, as long as it's $3 and under. It sounds really cool.
Seriously, that's like the price of a coffee, except you can have some existential dread about the military and wars with aliens instead.
Victor's getting it. You did it.
Nice. Nice. Enjoy. I definitely want to hear your thoughts. We have like a detailed breakdown of some of the stuff going up on the site soon. So keep an eye out for that. All right, Dan, is there anything else you've been watching or reading, or shall we get into the world famous WIC News Lightning Round?
I'll say really, really fast. I watched The Franchise, new kind of reminded me of New Sheep satire. Not long at all.
How was it?
The first episode, it was fine. Didn't really thrill me or get me rolling, but I'll keep watching. Interesting. Maybe he was a 1V pony. I don't know. We'll see. But the show was fine.
A one V pony.
So let's move on.
Okay. So, all right, it is time for the I was trying to debate whether to swap out one of them, but my internet would not allow it. So it's time for the world famous WIC News Lightning Round. If you are a new listener or watcher or any of those things, what happens now is that we give our 20-second takes on news stories we didn't have time to do in the main body of the show. And if we go over 20 seconds, producer Richard buzzes us into shame and infamy. Which sounds like that. All right. So, Dan, as always, these are not really in any order, but why don't you ask me this one first, because I'm real salty about it.
Yeah. So Netflix cancels a TV series that, I'll be honest, I had not heard of, about a Greek gods in a modern context, starring Jeff Goldblum, called Chaos, but spelled with a K. Daniel, what do you think about that?
I am so mad about this. And it's funny because like I liked Chaos. I wasn't obsessed with Chaos, but it's just a really solid show. It had Jeff Goldblum as Zeus. It had Stephen Delane Stannis from Game of Thrones as Prometheus. They're hilarious together. It had Aurora Perrineau as Eurydice. She was from Westworld. Really good cast. Solid writing. Netflix fumbled it. How do you fumble Jeff Goldblum as Zeus? all right. Speaking of DC villain movies, DC is making a movie about Batman villains, Bane and Deathstroke, and also another movie about Robin. Multiple Robins.
Tempting fate, aren't we? They really haven't released a proper DC movie under kind of the new DC studios with the James Gunn and Peter Safran. The first one's going to be the Superman thing next year, which will set the tone. So check back with me then whether I'm excited to see a movie about these two villains paired together, because I don't know.
Yeah, that's really fair.
Daniel, author extraordinaire Brandon Sanderson, has released a picture book for children. His first, called The Most Boring Book Ever. Is it on par with works like The Stormlight Archive and The Mistborn series?
Who can say? I imagine no, but he did team up with a fairly well-known illustrator who I forget the name of for this.
Me too.
And I think the goal of it was he wanted to make a book that would be fun for kids, fun for parents who are reading it to the kids. And this isn't really that out there, in my opinion, because Sanderson is written kind of across all age groups. He's written for children before, just not picture books for children. So fine with it. Carry on, good sir. Carry on. All right. Here's this one is really interesting. I thought this was a very interesting story. So Game of Thrones star Christian Nairn, who's Hodor, he released a new book recently, a memoir, and he said in it that he used World of Warcraft to kick his drug addiction.
Yeah, basically, the Christian Nairn Hodor was doing a lot of stuff like party drugs. He's like a DJ. He goes to clubs. So, you know, what do you want? He got it all. He got the cocaine. He got the he got the other stuff. I don't know. Ecstasy. That's the one. And he just locked himself in a cabin for who knows how long, played World of Warcraft and like detoxed. Which, hey, put that on the box. All right.
Why don't they? They should. You know, people were so worried about Warcraft addiction.
True. Little like did they say, know. Well, it could be worse. And we can and we have the answer to prove it. Daniel, thanks for not asking me this very sensitive one, because you've seen Outlander and I haven't. Outlander star Tobias Menzies, who also played Edmure Tully in Game of Thrones, disagrees with other Outlander star Sam Heughan's take on a very controversial sexual assault scene that happens in the first season. Care to elaborate for 20 seconds?
Yeah, so this is really fair. Sam Heughan basically talked about how traumatizing it was to do the Wentworth prison scene, which is probably the most infamously brutal scene in the entire show of Outlander.
Even I know about it.
Let's put it this way. I haven't rewatched that scene, even though it's a great episode. Tobias Menzies talked about how they were just doing a really awful, brutal depiction on there, and it made him sad to hear how hard it was for Sam, basically. All right. So speaking of the Joker, which we rhapsodized, we talked about it earlier. apparently, the first Joker movie was going to end in the same way as that Joker 2. It was going to end similarly to that thing Dan just said, but Christopher Nolan vetoed it.
I'll just spoil it. At the end of Folie à Deux, one of the main characters, he like turns himself into Heath Ledger's Joker, which is going to happen at the end of the first one, where Christopher Nolan's like, how about no? And then Christopher Nolan fell out with Warner Bros. After they released all those things straight to streaming. So he doesn't work there anymore. So he wasn't around to say no to the second one. So they just did it, and nobody liked it. So another reason to happen. Yes, I like Victor's idea. Joker 2, Chic Filet. Okay. we're doing a lot of DC superhero stuff today. Daniel,
there's a lot.
HBO's making a Green Lantern TV show, which, you know what? After the Penguin, I'll give it a chance. And they've cast Rebel Ridge star Aaron Pierre, also a French name, as lead Green Lantern character John Stewart, no relation to the Daily Show comedian.
I love this. So Rebel Ridge is like a thriller movie that is on Netflix. Aaron Pierre, it was like a star-making turn for him because John Boyega backed out at the last minute. So Aaron Pierre got this job. He was amazing in that movie. I love to see this for him, that he's now cast in the HBO Lanterns show. I hope it's good. I hope that's James Gunn's first DC television show, I believe, or live action one.
Okay. Cool.
So yeah. Well, hope that goes well. Oh, yeah, Peacemaker. That's true. I always forget Peacemaker because it came out before the regime change.
Right. It wasn't bad. But
that's a Peacemaker was fun. I enjoyed it. I hope it has different vibes than that, but is equally as good. So let's end on a note talking about sales. So apparently today there are big sales going on Amazon. It's Prime's big deal days. But for us, a thing that means that's especially exciting is you can get the works of Game of Thrones creator George R.R. Martin on insane discounts. Tell us about this, Dan.
Yeah, also Game of Thrones, the complete series, House of the Dragon seasons, it's all discounted. Amazon has too many of these days. I felt like there was like there's like Prime Day, and there's like big Prime Days later in the year. it's one of those things. If like, if something's always on sale, is it ever really on sale? But if you want to buy crap, now is the time. Go to Amazon, give them your money. Give them your money. All right. Daniel, that is our show. That was a lot of fun. I had a good time. I had a good time seeing all of you guys.
Same.
Thanks for watching us. And we are here every week at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, or 3 on the East Coast, and noon on the West Coast, and 1 on the mountains, whatever. We talk about sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, etc., and so forth. Also, download us in podcast form wherever you get them. Wherever you go to get your podcast, we're there. And remember, next week, join us at Central Standard Time on Wednesdays at Folia 2 o'clock. Goodbye, everybody.
Nice. Take care.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.